Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. Jazza, how excited are you for the second annual edition of the Centrist Dad Awards?
I'm happy. I'm happy about it. I think we should get physical awards at some point.
Right.
And then mail them to the people who end up getting them. I think that would be a really good marketing campaign, advertising campaign, don't you think? And it would just be like a mug that said world's best dad on it or something.
Yeah,
like a golden
something
mug.
Like that, yeah.
It could be the golden mug, the golden mug awards.
I think we can make this happen, actually. I think we can...
Oh dear, what have I done?
I may have to rethink some of my nominations on the sly, but... yeah, you know, I think we can make this work.
Excellent.
People may be getting their awards, you know, on the off chance that any of our nominees slash winners are listening to this podcast. It may take me a couple of weeks to make this work, so you know, bear with me.
There are shipping issues.
There are shipping issues.
Global shortages.
There are organizational issues. It might be nearer February. Let's say. Let's not overpromise her. I think.
Excellent. Hello, dear listener. Welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, where we talk about politics, social issues, and current events, and occasionally indulge ourselves enough to think that we are important enough to dole out awards to people at the end of a year. It's just a way for us to be able to look back at the last 12 months and to think, fucking hell.
Yeah, this is a way to reinforce Jazza's long-running mental breakdown that's been happening over the past year and will
continue. It's well documented over 197 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, rather than actually talking to a shrink, you could just send them a couple of links to representative episodes and just get them to listen and provide feedback, I would say.
I actually think that would be a lot more useful, to be completely honest. What's your relation like with your dad? Damaged!
Okay, we don't want to turn this into an explicit therapy session for Jared.
I just feel like he never told me he loved me.
Right, okay. As per last year, we do have five categories of awards. We've tweaked them slightly.
We had huge amounts of feedback.
Yes, you know, masses of feedback.
We still haven't got through the letters.
We haven't, or none of them. But we've got five categories here, which were not made up half an hour ago. some of them, I mean, you know, some of them are from last year, to be fair. So we've got most banterous news story / event. The biggest opportunist of the year, the most cancel-worthy person of the year, and then the last two, which are very on brand, the most honourable person, you know, relating to politics in the year, and then the most dishonourable person to finish up. And we might, if you know, we can get Jazz in the right sort of festive mood, talk about our hopes and dreams for 2022. Or he might be feeling too depressed at that point, and then we'll just wrap up things early.
Yeah, we'll see. 2021 wasn't great, was it? Yeah.
I guess that's what this podcast is here to ascertain, really, Jazza.
You know, is that the last question that we have? Was 2021 better than 2020? I think it's a very good question.
It is a good question. Yeah, I think we'll provide some sort of insight into that over the course of the next hour. But without giving anything away over who our nominations will be, I guess we should play some music, talk about the Patreon account for a little bit, and then we can go straight into the first category. How do you feel about that, Jazza?
Positively throbbing. Let's go.
Excellent.
I love positive throbbing.
If you've been enjoying listening to the Right Dishonourable podcast and want to get a little bit extra from us, you can go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable and access a host of bonus episodes which are released after every full episode is put out. In recent weeks, we've discussed the New Zealand smoking ban, proportional representation, a favourite of ours, and Facebook's metaverse project. So if you want to listen to the back catalogue of bonus content, go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable and you'll see all the sign-up details there. Thank you very much to our existing patrons, Alexander Wood, Andrew Kilpatrick, David Preston, Gemma Cumming, Jer Carney, Matt, Michael Costa, and Nick Webb. Thank you very much for your support. I'm ready, I'm recording, this is happening.
Oh my God, how exciting. So, our first category, Jimmy,
yes,
is banter story of the year, most banterful story of the year.
Yeah, I had most banterous, but we can...
A Bantasaurus Rex.
Yeah, or, you know, the Bishop of Banterbury, that kind of thing.
Great, yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
Really good.
Very good. Am I starting off with my nomination? Is this how this is going?
Yes. Yeah. I say it, then you do it.
Okay, very good. Okay.
That is how conversations usually flow, I think. One person speaks, then the other one.
You'd think after almost 200 episodes, I would have
figured
it out by now.
By the way, listeners, take a shot every time we mention that number of episodes that we're at.
So I picked a fairly obvious one, I think, for this category. I'd be interested to see if you pick the same thing. But I feel that Clinchgate, as I'm going to call it, or Matt Hancock being discovered cheating on his wife, flouting COVID rules.
Matt Handycock.
Yeah, Hat Mancock, as some people would call him. Who, at the time, he was health secretary, wasn't he? Which is what made it especially egregious that he was breaking all the COVID rules. Mm. But footage was leaked of him fondling, kissing, grabbing the arse of one of his colleagues at the health department.
Yeah, Gina Colodangelo, who apparently they'd had a long... Well, they'd known each other for a very long time. They were friends at university. Can you imagine the coincidence of employing a friend of yours at university? I mean, what has to align for that to coincidentally happen? That's so crazy. they shut the door and then... he snogs like a 14-year-old. It was really disgusting. And I've kept on seeing it. And then there's been all of these end of year kind of like recaps, like Big Fat News Quiz of the Year or whatever it's called. And I have had to watch it all over again. And it's just, it's gross. It's like watching a child who doesn't know how to kiss. And then grabbed a bottom. Oh, God. Can she do shoulder? Clearly not. And this was the thing. Clearly, part of it is like, I clearly have no opinions on this story at all.
I thought I was going to have to justify this nomination, but you're doing all the work for me.
There's part of me that understands, theoretically, the desire to sleep with, say, Boris Johnson, the Mayor of London, the Foreign Secretary, that guy off the telly, the Prime Minister.
Yeah,
like there's a certain amount of kind of like romanticism and status with those positions. I don't think that you can really put the same amount of sexiness and appeal to somebody who's the health secretary.
Well,
it doesn't really have the same amount of, you know, allure.
He was still a minister of state, I guess. He was appearing on the telly regularly. Do you remember when he sort of fake cried? Because of, was it how much the NHS had suffered or like...
No, it was the fact that they'd started vaccines, wasn't it?
Right, yeah. And they'd,
and he was just so happy.
You know, he could have been genuinely moved, possibly. He gets a government car.
Do you reckon they ever did anything at the car?
Yeah, for sure. Like, definitely. if she's in it for the power trip, then that would be certain, I would say. They're still together, as far as I'm aware. They were definitely together several months after the scandal broke.
I'm so happy for them. You know what my favourite bit of the story is that they try to, you know, sometimes there'll be a shamed minister who then gets like a cushy job at the UN or to chair COP, for example.
Yeah.
Alok Sharma isn't a shamed minister. He's acting like he's pretty decent. They tried to give, I can't remember what the job was, but they tried to give Handjog, yeah, a UN job. And the UN institutions clearly hadn't really done their reading, because as soon as there was a public backlash in the UK because he'd been fondling Mrs. D'Angelo or whatever her name is, they withdrew the offer for his position.
Yeah, so
which I loved. That is the definition of Schadenfreude.
So he was appointed as the UN Economic Commission for Africa's envoy for financial innovation and climate change, which is quite a mouthful.
He's got all of that expertise, isn't he? What?
But yeah, as you say, he lost the job a couple of days after accepting it, according to Politico.
Good.
So yeah, that was that was really, as you say, the icing on the cake of quite a shit year for him. But mm-hmm. It was a very funny story because the, as you say, his kissing technique left something to be desired. Also, I mean, just the way he treated.
God, it was like eating a sloppy kebab. That's how he went in there.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be a good candidate for most dishonorable politician of the year, but I have someone better for that.
I have someone better for that as well.
But yeah, I mean, you seem quite impressed by my nomination of Matt Hancock for most banterous story. What's your
I'm just enjoying recoiling at it. Yeah. On I was about to say on film. That is not the medium that we record these on.
That's true.
But I'm quite happy to like it's. The nostalgia, it washes over me. I don't know if it's banterful.
Right.
That is the only thing that I would contest. Shall I tell you my one?
Okay.
Because I think we've approached this in slightly different ways. I think that Matt Hancock is more of a dishonorable politician, kind of like he'd be better in that category. Of course, you can be nominated for more than one.
Yes.
My banter story of the year is the shipping container ship, the Ever Given,
right,
getting
yeah.
stuck in the yeah. Suez Canal in March.
For when I was several first, days, wasn't it?
It was It was delayed by 9 days, I believe. It was 6 days stuck in the Suez, resulting in a traffic jam. And I love the idea of shipping container ships. Of being described as having a traffic jam of about 200 vessels, putting huge supply chain delays on a global infrastructure that was already buckling under COVID, or having trouble under COVID. I loved this story so much because it really highlighted the unstable sands on which our whole global economy is built.
And you think that's banterous, do you?
I think it was just really funny that a ship getting stuck in a bit of water then plunged the whole world's economy into crisis. I thought it was really, really, I thought that was funny. What I also found funny was the fact that nobody really cared about where this ship was from, apart from the people who were the people from where the ship was from in Taiwan. In Taiwan, everybody was terrified that a ship that originated in Taiwan, it is run by the Evergreen Maritime Group, which is one of the biggest Taiwanese companies. Mm. You'll see their shipping containers all over the place. They were really worried that the global opinion of Taiwan was going to plummet because this big funny tragedy was had Evergreen plastered on the side of it, and they were like, oh my god, what's going to happen to our reputation as kind of like a nation? Like, everybody's going to be laughing at us. So and this... I can tell you now, Taiwan, my dear friends, no one cared and no one knew.
Yeah, was it definitely Evergreen, or was it Ever Given, the name of the
Ever Given was the name of the ship.
Ship, right.
Evergreen is the company. Evergreen gotcha. Maritime.
So how did it actually happen that the ship came to be stuck? Because that wasn't something that I picked up on at the time.
Well, I believe that there is still an inquiry out.
So we still don't know.
The people who were driving, the captain, if you will, there were unusually high winds at the time, which apparently blew it off course and got it stuck in the side of the Suez Canal. A side note, one of my favorite images was that when they rolled up a JCB digger to try and dig it out, and it was like a JCB, like it was no bigger than like a van next to like this hulking great 300 meter long shipping vessel. And it was just like the equivalent of, I think we need a bigger boat. There were some suggestions, and there's been compensation paid and stuff like that. There's been suggestions that the driver didn't know what they were doing, that there were incompetencies, that it wasn't properly looked after. Yeah, you know. But to be fair, the Suez Canal is like dead straight. It's very difficult to fuck up. I buy the wind argument.
I see. So an act of God, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it humbled us all. And for that reason, it showed us that we all have egg on our face because we were waiting for our PlayStation 5. I'm still waiting for my PlayStation 5.
I see. I'm quite impressed by your nomination. Are we going to decide the winners for these as we go through, or are we going to?
I mean, how do we? We don't have a deciding vote.
We don't know.
Shall we just get your girlfriend to do it? Oh, she's not in the house.
She's not, I'm afraid. No.
Well, I think mine's best. I think I should decide.
I actually prefer yours. I think so. I think we're going to give it to the Evergiven and the Evergreen Company and Taiwan as well, since they're so anxious about being linked to the tragedy.
God bless you, Taiwan. I love you so much, but this was very funny. The existential panic that they had.
So I will be sending a mug for the Centrist Dad Awards to the Taiwanese government at some point.
Taiwan, big fan. Yeah, thanks.
Might drop off at the embassy, Jazza.
But they don't have an embassy, Jimmy. Oh, yes. They aren't recognised in most countries right. across the world.
The embassy that isn't an embassy.
Yeah. The representative office.
Yes. So that's the most banterous. We're going to move on to biggest opportunist now as our second. I think, Jazza, you should probably go first on this, just to even out the keels, as it were.
Yeah, the keel. Was that a... I don't know.
I think it was a pun, actually. But what is a keel?
It's something shippy.
Shippy. Yeah. So, what's your nomination for biggest opportunist?
My biggest opportunist is maybe comes as a surprise, as I persist in being a member of this party. But the biggest opportunist is Ed Davey.
Oh.
And I'm basically
leader of the Lib Dems.
Leader of the Liberal Democrats, in case most of you didn't know, which is fair, to be fair. And I kind of work backwards with this nomination based on the fact that Liberal Democrat members of Parliament and candidates have been forced, I'm sure against their will, by the tyrant Sir Ed Davey to do all manner of publicity stunts. Famously, Leila Moran had to trundle through a plastic bricked blue wall to represent how the Lib Dems were going to smash the blue wall in the southeast, in the southwest.
They've used that metaphor a couple of times, haven't they?
Yeah, and most recently, winning the North Shropshire by-election this December, they had a photo op where the new Lib Dem Member of Parliament Helen Morgan had to pop a blue balloon that said Tory bubble on it, or Boris's bubble. It was Boris's bubble, sorry. So they've popped Boris's bubble. Very good. The Lib Dems have done really, really well this year. Of the handful of by-elections that we've had, two of them have swung from Conservatives to Liberal Democrats. One, as I just mentioned, North Shropshire, which was Owen Paterson's recent seat. I'm sure we'll be talking about him later.
Yes.
Where they overturned a 23,000 majority to win it by nearly 6,000 votes, which is pretty fucking impressive. North Shropshire had been Tory since, for 200 years. What I really loved about this campaign and why I think it was opportunistic was because... I'm sure Helen Morgan is a lovely individual, but her campaign literature was lacking, well, anything, really. Do you remember what her three main pledges on the front of her campaign literature were?
No, not at all.
So it was local choice for North Shropshire, which basically boils down to, I'm from here.
That's a big deal in local elections.
Sure, shut up. Let me do my thing. Number two was fighting to cut ambulance waiting times.
Okay, yeah.
Honourable.
Sure.
And third was an MP who will always put our area first, which I mean, that really is kind of like the job of the MP, isn't it? That's directly in the job description. And nothing else. No other promises, no declaration of what she's going to do, nothing at all. Good for her. She won the seat. Very good. Popped Boris's bubble. Great. Mm. The second Lib Dem win that they had this year was in July, and it was Chesham and Amersham. And Sarah Green took the seat, overturned a 16,000 Tory majority to win the seat by 8,000 votes, which had been a Tory seat since 1974. The problem was Sarah Green was going around saying that she would be in the thorn of the side of the government that was trying to allow HS2 to go ahead, where it's actually Lib Dem policy to back HS2 and to complete HS2.
Mm.
Now, I'm all for the Lib Dems fighting on local issues and locally.
Right.
And they are well known as doing very well in local elections. But for goodness sake, you can't have a candidate who's going around counter it either with no policies whatsoever or with somebody who literally has viewpoints or is saying viewpoints counter to the policies that would be enacted if the Lib Dems ever got into any kind of power. And so as such, and also sparing a thought for the poor Tory MPs that are having to do those photo ops, that's why Sir Ed Davey is my biggest opportunist of 2021.
I mean, that's a reasonably good case.
It was a lot, wasn't it? I apologise.
Yeah, no, it was very extensive. I think people would say that the Lib Dems' only route back into relevance is probably being a little bit shifty around some of these by-elections, mm-hmm. and a bit opportunistic, one might say. Yeah. You know, it fits into the category. We'll see what you think of my pick, and then I don't know if you'll remember this story, Jazza, but earlier in the year, very briefly, Navarra Media was cancelled. you're a big fan of Navarra Media, aren't you, Jazza?
Oh yeah, I'm subscribed everywhere.
So Navarra Media, very closely associated with Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of the Labour Party.
I don't know what you mean, they're fair and balanced.
To be fair to them, I don't think they claim to be unbiased, but
that is a good point.
They claim to be countering the establishment media, etc., etc. So they were briefly taken off YouTube for reasons that are still not entirely clear to me, but they'd violated the free strikes policy in some way, and so their entire account was taken down for a couple of hours on Twitter. Aaron Bastani, who's the sort of main figurehead, Ash Sarkar, who's another key contributor to Navarra.
She's literally a communist.
She's not literally a communist anymore, although she did once say that.
Really?
Did she
roll back her communist leaning?
I think she's recanted on her communism for now.
What is she now?
Probably a socialist, I guess.
Oh, you know, that's nice.
Something a bit lighter. Don't want to go for the full-blooded communism anymore. for a while, they were like going around on Twitter basically saying, you know, this is a matter of free speech. You know, we can't have tech giants just cancelling us, just shutting down dissident voices like our own. And eventually the YouTube account was reinstated and all was well with the world. I have to say, I agree that it is a bit of a problem that we have tech companies, including slightly awkwardly Jazz's employer, having so much heft.
Can I just say, you've chosen a story I can't say anything about.
Well, I don't need to. We don't need to focus on the whys and wherefores of YouTube policy. But I agree with Navarra Media that we should probably have rules that are set out by governments for when vital internet services can be removed from somebody's access.
Jimmy is speaking in a personal capacity, just to be very clear.
Yes, just to be clear. But I also think that it's entirely two-faced of them to be arguing against this sort of cancellation when it happens to them. Literally, one of their one Navarra staffer, Gary McQuiggan, was celebrating in 2020 when Katie Hopkins, who admittedly is quite an unpleasant individual, was suspended from Twitter. And, you know, immediately did a vault face when it actually happened to him. And, you know, Asha Khan was doing some interviews afterwards where she was, you know, invoking the harm principle. And she's like, only when speech is harmful should it be liable to be, you know, to the speaker being cancelled. I mean, I think that's kind of unworkable as a principle, but I just don't really buy the whole position of Navarra Media on this. And I think just kind of cast themselves as free speech champions when it suited them was entirely opportunistic and insincere from my point of view. So that's why they're my nomination for Opportunist of the Year.
Interesting. However, I have to say, because I'm not allowed to have an opinion or to voice an opinion on something that includes my employer, I win again. So Ed Davey is once again, my pick is once again the winner of the two. Thank you.
Well, you don't have to comment on the particular platform. You can comment on Navarra Media's hypocrisy on this particular issue. That's the heart of the opportunism here, I would say.
Sure. I think I'd still rather not, because you never know, Susan may be listening. I heard she's a big fan.
Am I going to have to give you that one just by default then?
Yeah, you are.
Well, but Navarra Media is such a much juicier target than Ed Davey, who's so boring. this is outrageous.
Yeah. But you know what you were dealing with. This is your fault.
I'm declaring a tie on this particular subject. I'm not willing to concede.
Okay, well, you're in charge of sending out the mugs anyway.
Okay.
You do that. So our third topic, or our third category in these awards, is most cancel worthy. Now, Jimmy, why didn't you choose yourself in this regard?
Well, you don't know who I'm going to choose, actually.
Oh, are you going to choose yourself? That would be, I'd quite enjoy that, actually.
So I am actually going to nominate the Right Dishonourable podcast for the most cancel worthy. And I'm doing so on the basis that the government has announced plans to enact laws that will mean that internet trolls can face up to 2 years in prison for sending messages that cause psychological harm under the Online Safety Bill.
I'm going to get justice, and I've got so much evidence.
I said at the time that, you know, the government was undoing 6 years of painstaking work over the course of almost 200 episodes. Take a shot, listener. Mm-hmm. These plans haven't been fully fleshed out. I don't think they will make a great deal of sense when they have been fully fleshed out, just because mm-hmm. I think so many... I mean, you know, a crime based on likely psychological harm for something somebody said... I just, you know, the way the internet works, and this particular, I mean, if I tweet something at you that mildly upsets you, I guess that is psychological harm, right? And as you say, we've got
have screenshots,
abundant evidence of me upsetting Jazza over the course of the last few years.
I can't wait to find a new co-host.
And so I mean, I think the whole podcast is going down, Jazza. I think you're coming with me. So I wouldn't be so quick to rat on your co-host when it comes to the trial.
Fair enough.
I mean, I guess, you know, the most criminal offences are not retroactive, as it were. So we may just have to shut down the podcast rather than upset anybody else any further. But I think, you know, if I don't need to go, I don't need to give evidence for this. If you want to hear the evidence, then just listen to the back catalogue.
Yeah, there's basically too much for you to listen to. I think that is a very funny... That's a very funny nomination. Good job. Well done. I for most cancel worthy, and actually I am going to reinterpret this as most cancelled. Do you know who Lindsay Ellis is?
No, you'll have to enlighten me.
So she is a YouTuber who does video essays doing like analysis of pop culture. Kind of like ContraPoints, but more like Disney or fanficky stuff. Mm-hmm. Some of her greatest work is her applying the feminist lens to analyze the Transformer movies, which it's still worth a watch. Really high quality stuff. She recently just this week said that she was leaving the internet. She's no longer going to be making videos. She is a published and best-selling author. So she's going to be fine, but she's leaving the internet because she is really sick of all of the trolls that she's had to deal with. So I believe it was last year or the year before, because 2021 and 2020 are the same year. I think we can all agree. She tweeted something saying that a Disney movie that wasn't very good and really not worth getting too riled up about, called Raya the Last Dragon, had a lot of similar themes to stuff like Avatar the Last Airbender. I mean, even in the title. And then people cancelled her because she said that something Asian inspired looked a little bit like something Asian inspired. And she was continuing a year later to still get cancelled for a tweet that she sent out.
When you say getting cancelled, what were people just trolling her, or were they boycotting
her? People were saying,
"You're
being racist. This is such a bad trope. Blah 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 blah." It's basically the left of the internet eating its own again. They really do love practicing cannibalism over there.
I mean, so I do like the twist.
And you know
what?
I may just be cancelling the left.
I suppose that would include Navarra Media, so, you know,
that
would be putting them into.
But the thing is, I took another, you know, that grid.
Yeah, the political compass test.
Political compass test. I'm nearly a communist, according to that thing.
I see.
But I want nothing to do with
Ashokar.
Owen Jones and all of his mates, you know?
I don't think Owen Jones would identify as a communist, to be fair to him.
No, but is definitely part of that leftist sphere that I don't know, man. It sounds very stressful having them as friends.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally we have we've been discussing topics, or, you know, trying to decide what topics to do, and I have noticed a little nervousness from you around how some of your internet friends are going to react on Twitter, for instance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, once or twice it's happened. Whereas I don't have any friends, so it's not a problem for me.
Yeah, present company included.
see my nomination for most council worthy. I think I've got a very good reason why your nomination, even though I liked your twist on the theme.
Thank you.
You know, I did enjoy that. But I think surely the most cancelled person this year has to be J.K. Rowling. You attempted to cancel her on this here podcast.
Isn't it terrible how she continues to be able to make stuff and make loads of money and have a voice and be written about and have a platform? Isn't it terrible how she's been cancelled?
Well, she famously at the moment, there's that Hogwarts reunion special featuring the three main actors, and she doesn't appear in that, which is bemusing, right, given that she's the creator of the books.
So I've been clickbaited with a load of things, how they managed to incorporate her in some way, shape or form. Didn't they incorporate her in some way? Did you watch the
movie? I haven't seen it. I've just been reading headlines.
I think, okay, well, maybe watch the thing. I think she technically is in it.
I see.
I don't know. Neither of us know. But it seems like she's continuing to have a very lovely career, Jimmy, and I don't think that she has been cancelled. It's just we don't like her.
I mean, I'm perfectly fine with J.K. Rowling. just to make it clear.
We being me and the other people who don't like her.
I mean, she's not been cancelled in the sense, you're right, she still is writing books. She's still making a lot of money off the Harry Potter franchise in various ways. I think it's fair to say there's been a series of attempted cancellations against her for the past 2 years.
Sure.
Yeah.
She isn't cancelled, though, is she?
Well, we're going to get into the debate about what qualifies as being cancelled.
Lindsay Ellis has been cancelled.
Well,
she's been hounded off of a platform and out of a medium.
Well, she's decided.
We might have gone 1 year without talking about fucking J.K. Rowling.
But so Ellis has decided to remove herself from the internet, right? So,
because she was hounded off.
I mean, it's not like YouTube cancelled her YouTube account. It's not like, you know, a book publisher said, we're no longer working with you or anything like that. I don't think this qualifies as a cancellation. It's a self-cancellation, if anything. Mm-hmm. It's a self-imposed exile.
Does that not still count as a cancellation, though?
It's
just has self in front of it.
I mean, it's adjacent. you know, to being cancelled if you, you know, you decide you can no longer be on a platform because you're getting so much harassment. But I have to say, this is almost a moot point. I was just providing some discussion because clearly the most cancel-worthy thing this year is our podcast.
Yeah, I agree. You know. I will cede this one. You win this one. So excellent. That's 2-1 to me.
No, I didn't give you the second
2-1
one.
2-1 to me.
It's one. It's 1.5.
I mean, I'm sure you'll catch up.
1.5 or. Okay, let's move on to we're getting into the good stuff now. We've got most honourable and most dishonourable next. So to begin with, most honourable, Jazza, I think you're starting this one actually.
I am. And I kind of wanted to give this to a group.
Like Spice Girls, for instance.
Well, actually, it's the England team. But you know what? I'll be splitting hairs. So the England team, I'm going to give it to an England team, but then specifically to one member of the England team, who I'll go on to in a minute. All but right. Just to recap, England partook in the Euros, where we got to our first final since 1966 in the World Cup, where we were eventually in front of a home crowd, where we were eventually beaten by Italy. The England boys, and they are our boys, are not only really attractive, but they're also anti-racism. They're one of the only teams that continue to take the knee throughout the whole of the competition, and were really clear in why they wanted to take the knee. Gareth Southgate, the manager, was incredibly articulate, wrote beautifully about the role that the team had in providing a new type of Englishness and a different type of Englishness that was often held up by certain media publications and broadcasters. It is sometimes really difficult to be proud to be English. Like it almost feels a bit UKIP-y, doesn't it? bit BNP. But it was, I think I tweeted about this. It was so great to kind of like have a positive reason to be proud to be British, and the boys on the pitch really did represent that for me. In the face of so much adversity and criticism from across the papers and the media and politicians who are in government, I think my if we're going to choose one member of the England team, are you going to make me? Yes, you are. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I'm going to pick Tyrone Mings, who I really think got a big slap down. A load of we had penalty shootouts with Italy and it went badly. Surprise. England penalty shootouts, bad? Never. Loads of racist abuse for the majority black players who went up, and all of the players who missed their penalty kicks missed. Or I think all of the ones that missed were black players, and so they got a lot of racist abuse online. And our Home Secretary Priti Patel said quite rightly, "I am disgusted that at England, players who have given so much for our country this summer have been subject to vile racist abuse on social media. It has no place in our country, and I back the police to hold those responsible accountable." This is the same Priti Patel, you will remember, who criticised them for taking the knee and for making sport political. So Tyrone Mings quote tweeted that our dear Home Secretary and said, "You don't get to stoke the fire at the beginning of the tournament by labelling our anti-racism message as gesture politics and then pretend to be disgusted when the very thing we're campaigning against happens." So Tyrone, your golden mug is in the post.
So this is slightly awkward because I was going to nominate Gareth Southgate for similar reasons to what you just outlined.
But I think Tyrone gets it for like the smackdown of the Home Secretary.
Well, I thought that Gareth Southgate's article that he wrote for the Players' Tribune, which you did mention earlier,
that was also really good. Yeah,
I thought that was a more nuanced take on patriotism than I think there are various, you know, problems with taking the knee. just in terms of how it was interpreted in different ways, and it is actually an ambiguous gesture in many ways because it is used in different contexts. Also one that was imported from America for, you know, slightly weird reasons.
So apparently the reason that I really like that the team decided to do it was apparently all of the players sat around and had a conversation about racism, the racism that the black players and the non-white players had experienced, and why they wanted to take the knee, and the whole team decided to do it.
That's fair enough, yeah, but I you know, you can't decide a gesture is clear when it is ambiguous. That's just a fundamental of communication, I'm afraid.
I'm not sure what else they can do other than give their reasons.
Yeah, no, I agree, but you are... I think it's just one of the things, this comes up again and again in public discourse, is that, I mean, if you can say something exactly clearly using entirely unambiguous language, and you are guaranteed that somebody somewhere will misinterpret you, either willfully or otherwise. So it is sort of just part of the risk of taking part, I would say. I feel like I have to provide a genuine alternative, though. Otherwise, this is going to be a very boring category.
Do you have one?
I do sort of have one. I mean, in the most honourable brackets, I feel this could go down controversially with you, but I was going to nominate Angela Rayner, actually.
Okay.
The Labour Deputy Prime Minister.
Oh, interesting. I have fluctuating views on her.
Okay.
I think of her broadly positively at the moment.
Okay, we can talk about this.
Mainly her great hair.
She does have good hair, that's definitely true. So Angela Rayner has made headlines for, among other things this year, calling conservative scum, quote unquote. And she said this on the sidelines of the Labour conference, and then was challenged on it in the media, and she basically said that she'd only apologise if Prime Minister Boris Johnson would apologise for his own previous comments that are variously homophobic, racist or misogynistic, to use Angela Rayner's
which are literally in writing. And to your point earlier, often his get out is that,
so
I think that's a direct quote, actually.
Yeah, I think some of his columns have been sort of willfully misinterpreted, but there's clearly some pretty saucy stuff in his back catalogue. So that's sort of quibbling at the margins there.
I've never heard the word bum boy be used in a positive manner.
Yes,
so.
For instance, but I'm particularly thinking of when he was sort of taking the piss out of a slightly colonial arrival in a, I can't remember which country it was, with Tony Blair went to visit a country, and he was kind of taking the piss out of Tony Blair as a sort of, in the, you know, comparing him to a visiting colonial official of some sort. And I think that the way that's been interpreted has been misleading, basically. I think I don't think you'd write that column today, but I think that people have misinterpreted
that. But he did
that,
read
for
it
instance.
Then. He did write it then.
But anyway, that's sort of around the sidelines. I mean, slightly disappointingly, Angela Rayner eventually did apologise for the scum comment after the killing of David Amos, the Tory MP in Southend. So in that sense, I think that does weaken the case. But I like that initially she said something in quite strong language, and rather than just scuttling away and saying that she didn't believe it or that she was misquoted or everything, she actually stood by it after being challenged on it, which is something you don't see an awful lot among our politicians.
I think of, what's her name? She used to be the shadow foreign secretary under Corbyn.
Lisa Nandy?
Nope.
What is her name? I can picture her, Emily Thornberry.
Thornberry.
Yeah.
It makes me think of like the polar opposite, really. Well, not quite, because Angela Rayner's apologised now. But of Emily Thornberry taking that photo of the white van with the England fags and saying the view from Leicester or something.
I don't think she actually tweeted anything, but it might have been. Was it? In
I think
Rochester,
she tweeted the photo, and she said the view from wherever it was that they were campaigning.
I actually think, looking back on that story, I think it's not obvious. I mean, it's not obvious that she was sneering. It was always interpreted as a sneer, and she does have quite a sneery manner, so I can see why. But on the, you know, on the facts of the case, I think you'd struggle to convict her for that. But But yeah, I mean, also Angela Rayner has seen off various challenges to undermine her from Keir Starmer. She was supposed to be reshuffled away from, I can't remember what her previous role was, but she ended up accruing a massive job titles after Keir Starmer tried to get rid of her. I think this was around the Hartlepool by-election, around that time.
When Labour lost in Hartlepool, right?
So yeah, whether or not I'm not saying that she would be my choice for Prime Minister or anything, or that I agree with all of her politics, but I think she's undoubtedly had quite a good year, which is why she does deserve.
Does that make her honourable?
Sort of on her own terms, I would say.
Okay. I mean,
slightly academic, because I'm going to give it to you, I'm afraid.
It's only because I went first, isn't it?
somewhat, yes. I mean, I would have picked Gareth Southgate, but I suppose we can align on the England team.
So that's 3-1. So I've definitely won, but we just find out now by how much.
I guess 2-1, I would say. One of them was a stalemate.
You would, but that's not correct. Okay. So
it's not about winning, Jazza. It's about taking part. These are all participation trophies of a sort.
Oh, you fucking millennial, shut up. So our final category is most dishonourable.
Yes, and
who have you got for the most dishonorable? Do you see what we did there? It's the name of the podcast.
Yes.
Who have you got?
There's unfortunately a wealth of opportunity, I think, the last year, as there always is with this particular award.
There's too many. If you say Johnson, though, you're boring.
Boris Johnson, I mean, in a way, I think you have to attribute most of the dishonorable behavior to Boris Johnson ultimately, but as you say,
he occupies a lot of overlap in many of the dishonourable stories.
Well, I think he could definitely lay claim for involvement in most of the best candidates for this award. But the one I'm going to go for is actually Dominic Raab. And I'm particularly going to go for him because I think that I mean, obviously, you could say the worst event for Britain politically this year was just the general and continued mishandling of the pandemic in various ways, albeit, you know, we had the vaccine rollout, so we had a better 2021 in many ways to 2020. But I think that the worst news story was the British withdrawal from Afghanistan, which admittedly was driven by the Americans. I think the consensus view is that it would have been difficult, if not impossible, for Britain to maintain a presence in Afghanistan without the American support. But I think that the way it was handled and not planned at all, and the behaviour of the Foreign Office during the withdrawal from Afghanistan was just atrocious. And
I mean, he was fired from the back of it, wasn't he?
Really? He ultimately was fired. Yeah. Isn't he deputy PM now?
So he's deputy prime minister and justice secretary.
Is he justice secretary? Okay, yep. But that is, you know, that's still a demotion. It's now Liz Truss who's heading up the Foreign Office. But Dominic Raab famously not only was on holiday when all the stuff in Afghanistan was going on and the Taliban was retaking control, but he actually refused to come back off holiday. And there were lots, I mean, I can't remember the name of the guy. His surname is Marshall. He gave some evidence to a parliamentary committee which just showed that the Foreign Office was just in an absolute state when all of this was going on. You know, various things came out, such as, you know, people's refusal to kind of work overtime during the crisis was causing problems. Loads of communication went unanswered. We also had this whole debacle involving Penn Farthing, who is the head of some sort of animal charity, who managed to lobby to get his animals removed from Afghanistan instead of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you obviously can say the COVID pandemic is a bigger kind of scandal in general, and I'd be very sympathetic to that. But I think as a discrete event, the Afghan withdrawal was just calamitous, and I think that Dominic Raab ultimately has to take the blame for it.
Excellent. Yeah. No, I'll allow that. I think that's very good.
Yeah. So who's your choice?
Owen Paterson.
I wondered if he was going to come up.
And Owen Paterson, well, I teased him before.
You did.
Didn't I?
You
if
did.
You were actually listening and paying attention, Jimmy, thank you very much. And it's one specific reason why Owen Paterson is on here for most dishonorable, which I think is probably going to be interpreted as unfair, but I don't care. So he was a disgraced member of parliament who the parliamentary select committee, is that
something like that?
Yeah. Chris Bryant, the thing that Chris Bryant heads up, he was found guilty, I guess. Is it guilty if it's not in a court? I don't know.
So this is the Committee on Standards and Privileges.
Thank you. It's not the Parliamentary. It is the Parliamentary Select Committee on Standards.
Yeah,
and, That's what it's called. So he was found to have been using his ministerial privileges in order to curry favour for. He was basically lobbying for a couple of companies.
He was lobbying,
He was. Don't make me say allegedly. He was. it was found to be true.
He was accepting bribes to lobby for a company.
Mm-hmm. And it was suggested that he was being paid to lobby and to change the rules so that these companies did better. That is bad. His peers suggested that he be suspended from Parliament for 30 days. Owen Paterson said, well, this is absolute rubbish. I'd do it again. I don't really care. So showed absolutely no remorse. The Conservative Party then tried to change the rules retroactively so that they'd be able to appeal his case again and for it to be seen by something else, which is I don't want to be melodramatic, but I am going to parrot the words of Navarro Media here. That's basically the fucking Kremlin.
Well, they would know, wouldn't they? With all the communists among their ranks.
Sick burn! Then there was a huge backlash from MPs and from the public and from the media. And Owen Paterson decided to quit as a member of parliament. Because he'd been treated so badly. Poor man. I'm sure he was crying into his mountains of cash.
Well, his two lines of defence, the two lines of defence that I kept seeing going around the media is that there'd been some sort of... He'd not been allowed to call some witnesses that he wanted to. And so there was an argument that was being made. I don't agree with any of this, just to foreshadow. There was an argument being made that he'd had an unfair process in terms of how he was judged by that committee, and you know, sort of effectively arguing that it was a mistrial, if you put it in broad legal terms. So there was that argument going around, and related to that was also the suicide of his wife,
which is why I'm putting him as the most dishonorable.
Okay, go on.
Because I still fail to see how, like, the suicide of his wife is obviously incredibly, incredibly sad, but it should not be a reason why he is let off. Like, he'd been found guilty of lobbying for these people long before his wife committed suicide.
Well, I think the lobbying was happening long before his wife committed suicide.
And it kept on being brought up as a reason why the committee should have gone easy on him. Mm. The committee had already taken it into consideration. They had made that really, really clear. That's why his suspension was only 30 days.
So how did they want to public punish him then? What if...
We won't ever know. We won't know but I thought it was incredibly distasteful for people around him to be going on to the news to continuously be bringing up his wife's suicide as a reason why we should go easy on him and why he shouldn't have to be suspended from parliament for taking bribes.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was almost a suggestion that this the investigation around his lobbying, I can't remember what the timelines were for this, but there was almost the suggestion that the investigation had contributed to her suicide in some way, her decision mm-hmm. to commit suicide, which is, as you say, incredibly distasteful, and just bemusing on many fronts. I think what he did should be an imprisonable offence, which I did say at the time. I think if you take hundreds of thousands of pounds from companies in order to try and change the law to their benefit, you should be sent to jail. I don't think you should be allowed to carry on in Parliament, for sure. Mm-hmm. And yeah, ultimately, as we said before, in the North Shropshire by-election that followed, the Tories were punished for what they'd done. So I guess it's kind of works out in its own way. Mm-hmm. It's been an amazing year for lobbying scandals, because you had the David Cameron one earlier in the year. You also had the
Greensill, yeah?
Yeah. The Greensill scandal.
Which always sounds like they're coming around to do you double glazing to me.
Greensill?
Yeah, it sounds like some a double glazing company.
Eco-friendly window installation.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
And there was also the Jeffrey Cox was found to be living on the Caribbean and getting loads of legal work in, which is not really a lobbying scandal, but is a not really doing the job you're paid to do scandal. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been a great year for corruption and parliamentary misdeeds in general.
God, they're just a load of shits, aren't they?
Of which the Owen Paterson scandal is the leading one, I think. I mean, I still think the handling of the Afghan situation.
I think you're right.
Dominic Raab seem a more serious story.
I'll let you have that. But that does mean I win 3-2.
It means we're 2-2. And
three to two.
is a tie. Listeners can write in and say which one of us is right on this. And also, yes, you know, with their own suggestions and whether we missed out on any particular news stories that would have been good candidates for these categories. I mean, some of the, you know, just to mention some that didn't quite make it. I do feel that in terms of banterous news stories, the newly launched GB News getting zero viewers at one stage.
Good shout.
And officially making me more successful than Tom Hardwood was a great story. I was very pleased with that.
On Banterful ones, I also had OnlyFans deciding to go, deciding to become a safe for work platform rather than somewhere where you can pay to see somebody's titties.
I've heard they've reversed that decision.
The fact that they then were panicked by everybody leaving OnlyFans and then reversed it. So now you can still sell your titties and your dickies online.
I mean, I'm not a businessman, Jazza, but if you're running a business and you decide to block most of the activity on it that makes you any money, I'd have thought it would have bad consequences for your business model.
Yeah, 100%.
That's my top business journalist analysis coming in there.
Mm-hmm. We've also not talked about any of the billionaires that have gone into space.
We haven't actually. Yeah, that did, but it didn't.
And I'm happy to keep it like that.
Okay. one that I actually considered for cancel worthy. Is actually Meghan Markle for the Oprah interview, and also for misleading a court early this year and just seemingly getting away with it, which I thought was a bit peculiar. But, you know, I'm Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, if they want a quiet life away from the media glare, I think that's fair enough. And I think they've been treated poorly in many instances over the past few years. But I think if you are going to retire from public life, you should do it properly and not keep coming back onto, you know, for instance, one of the biggest chat shows on American TV. I feel that's, you know, not conducive to having a quiet life. Mm-hmm. So she and Prince Harry, by extension, were one of my candidates for most cancel worthy.
Mm-hmm. One for most dishonorable politician. We haven't mentioned it. We started with Donald Trump being the US president.
We did.
And I'd still quite like him to be most dishonorable, almost cancel worthy.
Didn't he win last year? Like for trying to subvert the presidential election last year, I think he was our choice.
That was before there was a physical storming of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. by a group of cuckoo bananas people.
There have been a couple of essays in recent weeks where various American journalists are continuing to try and amp up that incident as an attempted coup, which I don't think
it was an attempted coup, well, but it is pretty unfucking believable.
It's bad. It is bad, but things could be bad.
Like, they weren't actually going to take over the government. Have you seen the that shaman guy with the buffalo hat?
Yeah.
He wasn't going to run anything.
I don't know. I feel in our country, he could probably head up a government department if he knew the right people.
If he knew the right people, exactly.
um, But yeah, there was a risk that various politicians in the building could have been killed. I think that was a genuine risk, and that is terrible. But I think the odds of those people actually overturning the presidential election were vanishingly small. I think it was essentially, it was a riot, I guess you could call it that. That seems fine. Mm-hmm. But I'm still unimpressed with that story in many ways. Mm. Should we try and end on a lighter note, Jazza? As we come to the end of this, we've been moaning for about an hour now. And I want to see if you've got any hope for 2022. So have you got anything that you want to mention?
Oh, is this going to age badly?
Yes. whatever it is you're about to say, the answer is yes.
I think the appearance of Omicron as kind of like, the more we learn about it, as we kind of like get more infections, great. And the direction that the mutations of COVID seem to be moving in, it looks like it is going in the correct direction. Like, it's not becoming a more deadly virus. It is becoming more mild. And although it's not necessarily, we don't yet know whether it's at the stage where we're not really going to worry about it any more than we do the flu yet. We're probably still a couple of years or more away from that. It took the Spanish flu about 5 years to be reintegrated as kind of like a normal flu virus. I have hope for the direction of movement that we're going in for the pandemic.
So that'd be nice. Your nomination is the Omicron variant. Then.
It's Omicron, yes.
Wow, I mean, that's something different, I think.
It's done now. That wasn't what I meant. My reason is Mother Nature running its course.
So last year we nominated a metaphorical cancer on society in the form of Donald Trump, and this year we've nominated an actual disease. So that's good.
Where do we send the mug?
I guess to the whoever detected it first. You know, I guess
lady in Hainan.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I'm going to...
Not Hainan. Where was it? Wuhan.
This is especially dull given your nomination that you've just made. But I said last year I was quietly encouraged by Keir Starmer, and I continue to be quietly encouraged by the direction of the Labour Party, which is polling very well now, I will point out.
Only took a complete collapse of any kind of goodwill that the people... I mean, I'm really disappointed that it's taken this long.
Better late than never, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And also, you know, the later you get your poll lead, the more likely you are to be able to sustain
it
to a general election. So in some ways, I mean, probably, you know, within the next 6 months, it'll dip back down again and it'll be more even Stevens. But... I think, you know, it's not so long ago after the Hartlepool by-election, which Labour lost, that people were talking about ousting Keir Starmer, said it's over for him. And actually, he seems to be doing reasonably well as it goes. Mm-hmm. So I still think I'm still hopeful that government can, you know, that party can eventually win office again, mm-hmm. Which I think would probably be a good thing.
But what happens when Liz Truss becomes Prime Minister and then she goes into the next election?
Well,
she's so bubbly.
I suppose sales of pantsuits are probably going to go up. She seems quite a fan of those. Beyond that, there's very very little I can predict. More focus on pork markets, I suppose. And cheese exports. You know, those seem to be her main things.
Yeah, they're really low at the moment, and that is a disgrace.
Okay, we've probably been talking for long enough, Jazza. As I said, sending your own suggestions if you're, you know, whenever you come around to listening to this. And, you know, maybe if I can be bothered, we will send some awards to some of the winners here. Maybe. I'm not going to make any promises.
I think that's a good idea. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening for another year. there's been a lot of, we've done this for a long time now. To everybody who listens, who interacts with us on Twitter, and all of that kind of stuff, but especially to our patrons, who help us keep our heads above water. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. And have a happy new year.
Happy new year. And old acquaintances forgot. Sing along. Old lang syne.
I don't want to spoil perfection like that. So I'll leave you to do your solo. Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Toodaloo.